This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to episode 501 of the Wells Tech podcast for Tuesday, June 13th, 2017. My name, as usual, is Martin Spriggs, and Sally Draper, as usual, is not in the building today, but she's in some building. Looks familiar back there. New Ulm, Minnesota, I'm guessing.
Yeah, where all the monkeys are smiling. That's it. So are you considering changing your name, Martin, or just...
Things have changed on the Wells Tech podcast. There's a number of changes we would have to announce. If anybody's visited, first of all, the show notes page, we have a fresh facelift there. We did add some new theme music, as you can hear, and new intro graphic. And what else is new? We're starting kind of our summer focus. Each summer, we kind of dispense with the regular script that we use and kind of shorten or abbreviate things, make it a little bit lighter, a little bit easier on us as things gear up. We've got Synod Convention ahead of us and vacations, and you have a wedding, and I have a wedding, and you have two weddings. I did one this summer, and so we're going to try and keep the show a little shorter, a little bit briefer. So a lot of things are changing. My name is not changing.
Okay.
My daughter's name is changing.
Your daughter's name is changing. I'm gaining two daughters-in-law, and one of them just 4 days away. So, you know, I think you could kind of discount this podcast from my perspective. I might say just about anything. Who knows?
You are pretty conservative in your approach to the podcast. You just don't go off in left field like I do. That's kind of that grounding force that we need to keep us going for more episodes. So we really appreciate that, Sally. So the theme... of these shows that we'll be doing over the course of the summer is continuing maybe a theme we started way back in last
January.
October was ministry resource focus. So what we're going to do is kind of highlight a ministry resource each week, talk a little bit about it, and that'll kind of be the theme of the show. And then we'll still do picks and a little bit of news/feedback. That'll be about it.
Yep. And I'm excited about this week's topic, Martin. You were up first at bat, and you brought to our listeners one of the best tools that I've just been using in the last few years, and that is Trello. So
yep.
Take it away.
I don't know if we've ever, this has probably been a pick of ours over the years, but I don't know that it's ever been a ministry resource. And a particular focus on the use of Trello in project management settings is really the focus of my blog post that I pulled up here. I was kind of drawn to this because I spent quite a bit of time updating the book we wrote last year, With All Your Heart, Project Management for Churches, Schools, and Faith-Based Organizations. And there were a number of resources. I can think of at least two that I had to, one I had to modify a little bit and one I had to totally replace, because throughout that book we have this tool time feature and we focus on some technology tools that'll help out in project management. And this was one I didn't have to change one iota because it still really is almost a centerpiece for our project management practices here at the CMM and our work together. But I'm hoping that a number of people out there in project management roles would recognize this as a real valuable tool. Trello, if you aren't familiar with it, and I can do a quick link to one little board that we put up in the book related to the related to chapter 3. And we used kind of a sample VBS project to kind of do some sample forms and tool demos, those kinds of things, and that's what we did here with Trello. But if you're not familiar with Trello, it's spelled T-R-E-L-L-O, and it's kind of a, it uses a paradigm of kind of a real-life board concept where you can put little columns, and really the centerpiece of the tool are these cards where you can give it a title, you can assign different people to a card, but then where the power really is when you click on a card, you get, you basically flip the card over and all kinds of things can be added to the back of your card, including a description. You can attach files to it. You can add due dates. You can create checklists. You can add tags or what they call labels. You can move them around on the board. You can add comments. And one of the really powerful things here, especially if you are on a project team, is the ability to have this running history or activity list of all the things that have happened on the card. So you can kind of see who is on the card, what they did. If there was a comment made, you can at mention, so to speak, different people so they get an email notification that, hey, there's something we want you to take a look at. They have these things called power-ups that you can add, just little add-ons that give it even more power, more functionality. You and I kind of live in Trello, don't we, Sally?
We do, and maybe breaking it down a little bit, when you're working on a project, you have what amounts to a million little tasks, and even taking a step back from Trello, the concept of getting things done is that you take the time to break down big goals and objectives down into the minutiae, and then you can kind of get lost in the minutiae, and Trello for us keeps all of that straight and gives us a way to search. There's a search box up in the top bar.
Yeah, very powerful search.
It also gives us a way to kind of show progress. One thing we do with our list is kind of this Kanban approach where you show things you have to do, things you're working on currently, and things you've completed. And you'll notice on the board that Martin's showing that it says to do, doing, and done. And it's a really nice visual to see those tasks move across the board and land in that done column when you're done working on them. So there's a lot of pluses to using Trello, and you know, these are just a few of the ways that you can use it. You certainly can design your own list and your own way of doing cards. I had to snicker, Martin, because you gave some great examples in your article, including things like vacation Bible school and projects and things like that, traditional projects, building projects, whatever it may be. When we did the treasure house purchase of a new building and we needed to remodel it and get everything moved there for our resale shop here in New Ulm, we made a Trello board and we had all our tasks on the Trello board. But you mentioned in your article weddings. Do you have a wedding board, Martin, for your personal use?
I do not. I'm really not a big part of the planning process. I'm part of the paying process, but not as much on the planning process. I do, you know, we've done, you know, some things, obviously, with invitations and such that I've helped them out with. But my wife is not a Trello user, but my oldest daughter is the matron of honor. And she's a big Google Docs user, so we've got spreadsheets and all manner of things. I know for a fact, however, that you have a wedding Trello board.
I do have a wedding Trello board, and I've made use of it and tried to keep my brain unclouded by adding tasks, adding cards to the Trello board and putting dates and things on them so I get reminders. And it's just a powerful tool, and it's one of those tools that once you use it, maybe for business purposes, for church or school projects or whatever, you collaborate on it, things like that, then you begin to see other areas of your life that could benefit from it. And so wedding for me was just a natural fit. At Christmas time, I did all my Christmas to-do things. So packages that needed to be mailed and packages that needed to be wrapped and gifts that needed to be bought. I put a card for each person. So I tracked what gifts I was getting them and ideas for gifts and things like that. So just another way that once I'm comfortable in this, it becomes a major tool in my tool belt of digital tools, and I can use it everywhere. One more thing that you haven't mentioned is it's very mobile friendly. There's a Trello app, and you can get to all your cards and do all the things that you demonstrated on a desktop on your mobile phone as well.
Yep. It really can serve a lot of different purposes. As you mentioned, can be a professional tool, can be a personal tool, can be a family tool. And I would think for most applications, and your mileage may vary, but for most applications, the free version might be just a nice fit for what you're doing. For ours, we need a couple of the add-ons that make it a little bit more enterprise friendly, but by and large, I think the free version is super functional and is a good place to start to see if it makes sense for you. So take a look at the blog post. We'll have a link to that. There's all kinds of links there to help documents, their blog. They're very good on the site on Trello.com and their blog especially, giving kind of productivity tips to project teams, helping them figure out how best to use some of the tools. And maybe I didn't mention in the article, but I think one of the big strengths of Trello is it's there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. It's very simple and flexible, and you can kind of structure your list any way you want. It's just like a blank slate. You're saying, well, I'd like to organize my list this way, and I like to put this on my post-it notes, blah, blah, blah. I think you've got a lot of different options there that would meet your personal styles and preferences.
You know, and I think the best advice you gave was give it a try. Don't feel like you have to understand everything right out of the gate. Just explore and begin to use the tool and see what your needs are and find out how Trello can help you with those needs. And I certainly know a lot more about it now because of experience, but I sure didn't know all that when we started, and that didn't keep us or hinder us from starting. So just an encouragement to people to try it out.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on, trying to keep things brief here. We still have our picks or tips of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, I came across I think this was a link from a Google email that I received as a Google certified trainer, and they had pointed to some forms tips for teachers and the fact that you could set up a form where people could report absences online, so they didn't have to call the school office in the morning. They could actually just report their absence right there on a Google form. Pretty simple. It asks for the child's name, the teacher's name, the start and end date of the absence, and the reason for the absence. So not only valuable in the fact that it frees up your administrative time, but also gives you kind of a paper trail. It gives you some documentation that you can rely on if you're trying to remember what the absences were for and things like that. Thought that was a great tip, and Google Forms are super easy to use. But what really intrigued me about this was the fact that I was actually in a Google Slides presentation reading this tip. And I thought, well, that's interesting. They're using Google Slides to do this. Now, we've talked about Google Slides being a real versatile tool and that you can do all kinds of layout. And I think they've done a good job with that. But I started paging through this slideshow, and I noticed it says on December 6th, Forms Teacher Tip, and December 13th, Forms Teacher Tip. So over time, they're adding one of these, and I actually made it to the beginning, and they're adding one per week. It's a weekly teacher tips for forms. And if you use hashtag Google Forms, then Google picks the best ideas, and they've kind of compiled them, and every week they release a new one, and they do it in a Google slideshow. And so I thought this was a really creative way to communicate, and maybe something we should even consider for Wellstack, Martin, that we have this Google slideshow. It could be embedded somewhere, or people could save a link to the slideshow, but it's continually being updated over time with new ideas and posts and things. So kind of a twofold pick of the week. I really like the idea of the absentee form, but I like the idea of how they presented it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Google Slides and Forms. I just did I mentioned it in the blog post for the Ministry Resource. I did a session at KML, Kettle Marion Lutheran High School, court staff conference, and that I did one on volunteers and put it in Google Slides. One of the neat parts about it is it's ready to share. They've added a lot of nice features to it, but once you've got it up there, very easy to make it public or create a link and send that out, or create a shortened link and send that out, and it's always available for people to get a hold of. So great use there.
Okay.
Great start to your summer picks, Sally.
Thank you, sir. And how about you?
My pick of the week is actually something I've also been working on with my own congregation. We're Shepherd Staff users at our congregation, and we are thinking about moving online to Concordia Technologies Church 360 product, specifically the members module. And it takes a lot of the same things that Shepherd Staff does, but simply puts them in a web interface. And by the way, we do have them, Concordia being them, in our Shop Wells program. And for Wells customers, we have a discounted price of $37.50 a month for a subscription, or $450 a year. What's neat about that, and that's a minor discount for smaller churches, but medium and larger churches, it's the same price. So there's a real value there if you fall in those categories especially. And that was kind of the thing that they wanted to do for us, to encourage, obviously, our use of it. But anyway, I wanted to make it my pick because I kind of have rediscovered its usefulness and its flexibility. The concept, and I can just log into a sample account here, the concept is actually very simple. You have people, events, attendance, offerings, and reports. And where some of the power comes in is in this tagging, the ability to tag individuals, to tag households, and your ability to slice and dice and bring reports up or find people based on those tags. So for instance, if you wanted to use this as a prospect database, you simply add an individual and give them the tag of prospect. And then anytime you want to bring up your prospect list, you simply type in prospect in the search box, and all your prospects get filtered onto the main screen. And then you can do all kinds of things. You can export the list. You can update the list. You can add different tags. You can send an email, which I don't know if this was always the case. I may be incorrect by saying this, but I think this is a newer feature where you can send an email. But what used to happen, I think, in Shepherd Staff today yet, is it opens up your own email client. So if you use Outlook or Gmail or whatever, and it'll plug all those email addresses into the to box or the CC box or whatever. What they've done here in the online component is they kind of bundle these up and actually do the email for you. So it creates kind of this one email in the to box that sends it to Concordia. Concordia takes that email, knows that you wanted to send it to these 20 people, 50 people, or whatever, and sends it through their own email system. I'm assuming they're doing that for a couple of reasons. It probably works better in a web interface that way, but also it probably helps avoid the issue that we would sometimes run into with being tagged as a spam, because we're sending so many emails, the same email, to so many people in our own email clients. The other neat thing about that piece of functionality is that when the email comes to these people and they hit reply, it actually goes back to the sender. So it doesn't actually go back through Concordia, but the relationship now exists between you, the sender, and the recipient. So they are essentially none the wiser that this went through a bulk email system, that there is capabilities to to make that, I think, a much better scenario than maybe what Shepherd staff uses. There's all kinds of other features and cool reports, and they have smart groups just like Shepherd staff does. We're going to be going through this process probably this summer, and what I'm most interested in seeing is how Shepherd staff data can be imported into the online version and what comes across and what might have to be manual effort. I already know there's some things with smart groups that don't come across, but most of it does. Attendance and offerings, those kinds of things, envelope numbers, those all come across. So we're hoping for a smooth transition and looking forward to kind of being in this online environment, which brings its own benefits where people can update the database and be involved with data management, not just from one PC in the church office or school office, but from any web-based screen. So that is my pick of the week.
And just like the good presenter that you are, you answered my question already, because I was really curious what that conversion was going to be like. That's kind of a pain point when you're dealing with databases. Yep. So we will want to hear back from you on that, Martin.
Yep, I'm excited about the process. So we've been in touch. Actually, I've been in touch with the folks at Concordia. We ran across a few things about how people are received or removed from membership. There were some inconsistencies with how Wells does it, because there is a Wells version of this. Mm-hmm. So our terminology is a little bit different, and how we ask for that in church stats actually is something that we're truing up with them, so that the way you would give stats to the synod would be the same way you would designate them in the tool itself. So some improvements on the way there too.
That's great. A win for Peace Hartford is a win for Wells at large.
Wells, most churches everywhere. Yes.
Excellent.
Let's move on. We want to do community feedback where appropriate, so we'll run through these pretty quickly. We don't want these to get stale, so we've got a couple of pieces of feedback already.
We do. Over in the Google Plus Wells Google Schools group, I'm trying to look. I think it was Matt Notling who asked the question, looking for a good tech book to read this summer. Obviously, education technology focused, and I just was excited about the responses he got. I want to read all these books. He mentioned he had already read 50 Things You Can Do with Google Classroom, and the follow-up 50 Things to Go Further with Google Classroom, a student-centered approach. So both of those sound like really good reads. I noticed the Kindle price is significantly lower than the paperback or hardback versions. But some that were suggested, Invent to Learn, Making, Tinkering, and Engineering in the Classroom, Launch, Using Design Thinking to Boost Creativity and Bring Out the Maker in Every Student. And that one's by A.J. Giuliani and John Spencer. I should have mentioned who the others were by. Here's another, The Innovator's Mindset, Empower Learning, Unleash Talent, and Lead a Culture of Creativity from George Kuras. And then finally, Ditch That Textbook, Free Your Teaching and Revolutionize Your Classroom from Matt Miller. So all of these have really great reviews. Martin, maybe we're looking at our future book to read during the season. I don't know, but there's some good books here for folks to check out if they're looking for some summer reading in the area of education technology.
Cool. While we're on books, let me interject here. I did mention that I was giving a workshop at Kettle Moraine Lutheran to a support staff conference, and I did buy some physical copies of our With All Your Heart project management book, and I have some left over. I've got about 6-7 copies here. If anybody's interested, we get these a little bit cheaper than you can buy them on Amazon if you're in the area, or even if you're going to be maybe at Synod Convention, I could bring these along as well. $15 would be the cost if you want to come by the Synod office or grab me in some other fashion. I don't want to send them all over the country, but if you're looking for $5 off a printed copy of All Your Heart, this is the new updated version that I was talking about, just let me know and we'll set aside a copy and get that to you. Sorry for the commercial, Sally.
Good stuff, though. I might need to
waiting for a home.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Moving along with community feedback, just a couple of emails we received worth mentioning. One from Christine asking if we produce or have ever, if there's ever been discussion on creating a podcast focused on Bible stories and lessons for children. Doesn't have to be very long, 10 or 15 minutes. Or do you have any to suggest? And so my answer was, I am not aware that we've done any kind of effort in that regard through Wells. I did forward the message on to our youth and family ministry area. And so great idea, Christine. And, you know, maybe some of our listeners are looking for a little niche to fill. And that might be something that someone listening, maybe you're a teacher and you already have something you've been capturing, for instance. Looks like there might be some interest in a children's podcast. So great idea.
Oh, that's an awesome idea. I wish, I hope that sees the light of day.
Yeah. And then we also heard from our friend Leslie Bergman. Leslie's at Good Shepherds in West Allis, and she uses Final Web as her, as their website of choice, web platform of choice there at Good Shepherds. And she had used their form tool and noticed that they are now requiring CAPTCHA on every form. So she was kind of alerting us to that. It used to be an option that you could turn it off or on, but it seems that to fight spammers, it's the way of these times now to include CAPTCHA, some kind of identification that you're not a robot just blindly filling out the form. And one challenge that she noticed was it doesn't render well on mobile devices. And so I suggested she might consider using a Google form and embedding it on her site as another option. But definitely be aware that these days are mobile driven and that your whatever you put on your website needs to be mobile friendly. Just a good reminder for us all.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, Leslie.
Yep. And then I came across an article that I found of interest. Apparently last week, Apple had a developers conference out in San Jose. And one thing they announced is their new operating system, iOS 11, which is scheduled to come out late summer or fall, and it is going to be entirely 64-bit driven, as I understand it.
Right.
And that's kind of big news for those of us that have older devices. So 5S, iPhone 5S and forward will work in this new iOS and 11 environment, but anything prior to that, so 5 and 5C, older iPads, none of them are going to actually continue to be supported with the new operating system because they operate on a 32-bit platform, and that's just going the way of history for Apple at this point. So thought some of you with older devices might be interested in that news.
Yep. And then I put the last item in here that I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of, since this was actually a pick of mine, I believe, last year. Microsoft's ServiceDocs.com is being retired. So by the end of the year, I think they said December 15th, docs.com is kind of a file sharing site where you can put different kinds of content. You can put Sway presentations. We've talked about that in the past, which are like kind of fun PowerPoint types of things. It's what we built the online version of the book in. You can put Word docs there. You can put all kinds of different items there for people to get at. Kind of Microsoft's public version of Google Docs, docs.com, is going away. So just be aware of that. If you jumped on that bandwagon, as I did, you're going to have to migrate those to some other site. And they're recommending OneDrive, which is pretty easy to use to make a public folder there. You just don't have kind of the presentation tools that docs.com has. So
at least they're giving us time to think about it, not till December 15th.
Right. So just wanted to remind everybody while I was thinking of it. We still want to do our featured video. Before we do that, Sally, we do have a little Wells news. And depending on when you're listening or watching this podcast, if probably missed the live streaming of the Worship Conference Festival Service, which is on Tuesday night here. But on Friday, the closing service is, I believe, at 11:30 this Friday. And that is being live streamed. So if you go to livestream.com/WellsLive, you'll see the schedule there and get the exact time if you want to kind of tune in to probably one of the most inspiring worship, Lutheran worship services that you'd have a chance to watch or be a part of. That would be a good place to tune in. It's being held down at Carthage College this week, which is down near the border almost of Wisconsin. So take advantage of that. livestream.com/WellsLive. Check out the calendar there for the service on Friday late morning. I think it's either 11 or 11:30.
Excellent. Thanks for that reminder. Speaking of some beautiful music, I have a video to share in this week's show notes, and it is actually from our friends at Lakeside Lutheran High School. Apparently, their a cappella choir was asked to sing the national anthem at the Milwaukee Brewers game, and they put together this fantastic video. It shows the kids singing as well as experiencing the ball game and their experience being down on the field to sing and things like that. So it doesn't end just with the national anthem. You get a little behind the scenes look at their trip to the Brewers game and the fun that they had there. So check it out. Awesome national anthem for the Brewers 2017. It was published June 6th. So they must have done this like the first week of June, and just some cool stuff that they captured in video. So check it out.
Thanks for sharing that. Is that going to do it this week, Sally?
Well, I think so. We're going to come back next week, though, with another ministry resource discussion. And this time I'm up at bat, and I'm planning to talk about something brand new from Google. It's called Be Internet Awesome. And if you aren't familiar with it, you'll want to tune in and find out how to be Internet Awesome.
Looking forward to it. So that will be post-wedding. We may have to revive Sally before the show starts to get this aired. So that'll be 5:02. We will be, I think, recording that a day later, just kind of a heads up. So if you are used to seeing things Wednesday morning-ish, I think that's about the time we'll be recording it. So it'll be a little bit later than that next week. So just be patient. It'll be there. Thank you, Sally. Nice show. Thank 501. Blessings on the wedding of your son. Awesome. God's blessings on that.
Thank you, Martin. Looking forward to it.
Yep, I'm sure you are. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.